You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Pick My Brain is the podcast where founders pitch me their startup and I try to give them some useful advice so they can connect better with potential co-founders, investors, media, and of course, customers. My name's Alan Jones and I was a founder myself for about 15 years, and after that an angel investor for another 15 years, so yeah, old. Some of my ventures have been successful and some failed disastrously, but I like to think I've learned a thing or two along the way, and maybe some of that can help you. So if you'd like to learn how to tweak your pitch, subscribe to the Pick My Brain show now, wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
We're very much doing diligence on the business as it stands today and the business that is likely to be over the next 6 to 12 months.
Welcome to FinTech Fun. FinTech Fun is a podcast where Australian fintechs come to share their stories.
Hi, it's Chris Titley here. As part of the FinTech Fun podcast series, I'm joined by Matt Allen over Zoom. Matt, thanks so much for being part of this series.
You for having me.
Matt, Tractor Ventures, let's talk about the inception, how it all began, and a little bit about yourself.
Sure. It all began late 2020, in earnest, January 2021. And unlike most funds, we actually just set out to solve a problem. And the problem was pretty clear to me after being in angel investing and tech investing for about 8 years at that time, that not all founders want to build a business that is backed by VC. And there's a growing cohort who do want to build a very big business, but don't want to do VC. So my time prior to Tractor was at Amazon Web Services on the venture capital and startup team, which was really eye-opening because I got to meet everybody who was using the cloud and then lots of people that were not venture-backed. And the question I always asked them was, where do you get your capital from? And, do you want to go faster? And the answer, the answer to the former sometimes was, customer revenue or friends and family. And everybody wanted to go faster. But we know that venture capital is an amazing, financial vehicle to really accelerate high growth, high potential tech companies. But there's a bunch of amazing businesses out there who are tech companies who will never get a dollar from VC. So that's why we started Tractor Ventures. So the name's a bit funny. We call it Tractor Ventures. In the time after Amazon and before Tractor, I was sitting on the couch and April, my wife, was like, you've got to go and do something. So I wrote a memo that said, it was called Rockets First Tractors. And it started off by saying that I believe that talking about unicorns makes us all look stupid in the eyes of the rest of the business community. And we sound a little bit like children. We all know that unicorns don't exist. So the analogy that I'm a
storyteller. So.
Yeah, well, you can tell a story, but you can tell a story about I believe rockets and tractors are a better analogy. So the VCs do the rockets. The rockets are on an exciting mission. They're expensive to build. They're complex. They're hard to land and they're prone to blowing up, which is almost a function of the capital, like the business model of the capital that goes into them. We know that VCs back a bunch of companies knowing full well that a large portion of them may not work at all, and they optimize for very, very large success or not working. The thing that always sat a little poorly with me with that is that, 8 out of 10 of those teams have got to go find something else to do. When they've raised capital to get going, but they can't raise any more capital because for whatever reason, the funders are no longer funding them. And that could be for multiple reasons. It could be because the company's not performing compared to the way that everybody thought it was going to do, which is just, it just didn't get there. Or it could be the markets change, the external macro markets are changed, and all of a sudden the capital out there has gone away. And that to me always felt like a rough ride. Like most founders know what they're signing up for, but it's rough when you're on the other end of that. So me and my team built Tract Ventures, which is alternate funding for ambitious founders. And that's what we do. So our main product at the moment is called revenue-based financing, which is a loan. It gets paid back via a top-line revenue share. It's paid back over a couple of years. It's non-dilutive. It doesn't talk about the valuation of your company and allows founders to pull forward some revenue so they can deploy it and then grow their business without handing over shares to other people. So, you know, I've been a founder several times, the tech founder, the software developing side of things mostly. I've been an investor, as I said, my wife April and I have 50 or so angel and early stage investments. Some of those are very big now. And it's just that the amount of founders who are making really informed decisions to build different shaped companies now is growing, and we just want to be here to help.
And Matt, the revenue-based funding, as you mentioned, is an alternative funding line and non-dilutive for founders. How much of the process is education to the founders? How much is the process of saying, this is what we do, this is a valid alternative?
Yeah, so we've been at it for about 18 months now. The first 12 months was very much a, hey, did you know that you don't have to sell shares? Because until recently, in Australia especially, the venture capital market was mostly an equity-based market. It was mostly you sell the shares. That's how you build a tech company. And that's based on the premise, the old premise of it's extremely risky and the upsides are huge. Therefore, I want to own a chunk of your company. I think with the maturation of our startup ecosystem here in Australia, which bearing in mind, you know, Blackbird Fund 1 of this generation came out in 2012 or 2013, so it's only 10 years old, where, you know, Silicon Valley, the actual Silicon Valley was in the 70s, so we've got a lot of cycles through there. So we're kind of new here in Australia. Debt has been either for the very top-end companies who the risk has been diminished, or not at all until recently. So we've come along in the last 18 months. The first 12 months was us telling people that, you know, maybe selling shares is not right. Since the public markets have gone a little crazy in 2022, the public prices have dropped through the floor, and there's been a very rapid move all the way through the private markets, including right down to early stage. There's a bunch of founders who now realize that selling shares is expensive. We've always told them it was expensive, but now it's really, really expensive and slow. So they've come to us and they're like, cool, now we understand that this is here. Then, you know, the next education is you know, how much does it actually cost and what's the impact on our business? So I went from a, by the way, you can do debt next to your equity. Now it's like, cool, we get that bit. Now let's explain how the actual mechanics of it works and it actually, you know, what's the impact on our business on a monthly basis.
And the feedback that you get from those businesses in regards to the due diligence phase and then the growth stage, I mean, you must be getting a mixture of feedback, but can you share some of that in terms of how progressive it is, you know, 6 months, 12 months, you know, 18 months down the track? Even, you know, I know you haven't been around for that too long, but certainly the ones that have been there from the start.
Yeah, on average, founders sort of head up to around 10% month-on-month growth after they take our capital, which are usually lower than that. They're usually a slower-growing business. The interesting conversations we have around the nuances of why would you use our money versus selling shares once you understand the cost of that capital. So the best thing you use capital for from us for is for things that have got a relatively short ROI. You know, you don't really want to spend interest on a software development team that you're yet to hire that's going to build a product that may or may not bring revenue to your business. You know, the best thing we ask founders to do is to think about the part of their business that operates quickly or has a shorter ROI, or best still, if you've got a growth engine where you can put a dollar in and more than a dollar falls out the bottom, it's very easy to model in capital like ours. And as we know, when founders do go to the market to raise capital, the valuation of their business is a combination of a multiple on their ARR. So the bigger the ARR, the bigger the valuation mostly. And the multiple is very sensitive to the steepness of their growth. So if you can take some non-dilutive capital, drive your top line growth at a quicker growth rate than you've been doing, and then go and raise, it's likely you'll get a better valuation. And then you can make a decision. You can either sell fewer shares for the same amount of capital, or sell the same or raise the same amount of capital, or raise more capital. So it's an interesting thought process for founders, and the feedback is, you know, if they're quite literate on the numbers of their business, things like their customer acquisition costs, their lifetime value, the ROI on marketing spend, the ones that can buy a customer and they know how much they cost and they know how long it takes to return, it's a really smart use case to use any non-dilutive capital to drive the growth of that company, because it's a very short short timeline between investing the money and top line growth.
And when companies come to you and they hear of your services, and you've just given some insight into what you're looking for, and do you handhold them and educate them in terms of the due diligence that you require, and for them to make sure that data is relatively easy for you to understand?
Yeah, so we do a couple of things when it comes to diligence. So a VC might be looking for things like, you know, what's the total addressable market? How big can this thing be? And a bunch of sort of very future-facing large things. We're very much doing diligence on the business as it stands today and the business that is likely to be over the next 6 to 12 months. So we take a combination of access to your Xero, and we go and poke around your Xero file to understand where some of the costs and some of the growth comes into your business and the margins you run it. We take your forecasts into account. We apply them into our risk engine, and it spits out a risk score, which then allows us to determine whether A, we can lend you or not, and then B, if so, what shape that loan will be. So we're definitely, it's pretty straightforward. It just gives us access to your Xero, read-only, gives you forecast month by month, and then that's about it. And our analysts get to work and they do their job. It takes about a week, and it's pretty straightforward. Our funding is non-dilutive. It's also unsecured, so there's no personal guarantees. There's no directors with their houses on the line to get this stuff done, and it happens pretty quickly. The other thing to think about is that what we actually do is we treat your revenue as an asset, your growing revenue as an asset, and we take a position on it in the future and we lend against it, which means that if it grows and it continues to grow, and if it grows even faster, then we're able to get you more capital. If that works for you, we'd never make you take it. But, you know, it's almost like if the value of your house goes up and your mortgage stays flat, it's almost like you can, you know, continue at your LVR if you want for forever. And that's happened multiple times. We've had several founders that have exceeded their own expectations and our expectations on how fast the company would grow. And instead of going off and selling shares, they've just come back and said, hey, you know, we're really happy with our 5% monthly revenue share, but we'd like some more capital. Can that work? And the answer has been yes, because they've been growing so quick. So we're happy to continue to take that position on your growing revenue. And because we're connected into your platform in Xero, we sort of, you know, have a really close understanding of how your business works and where you're going and where you've been. That's really easy for us to do.
And let's talk about Traktor, the company itself, since establishment, how that's gone and how that's grown and where you're at in terms of team members and size and opportunity.
Sure. So we started off as a team of three of us and our chairman, so Jody, April and Darcy. And then we're now a team of 16, which is spread across our the team that the founders talked to on the way in, our credit and risk team, our portfolio team and our finance team. We have a very large debt warehouse, which means that we have people who lend us money and then we lend it out to the founders. And the way we run our business is the cost that we get of that and the cost that the founders pay. And the difference is how we run our business every month. And that's also meant we've had to build some software to do it. So we actually have a tech and engineering team that's built our platform that is connected in and every month confirms your last month's revenue and then pulls the money out of your bank account on the 21st. And that's how it works. So, you know, As I don't know if I mentioned before, but we're a little confused. We didn't know whether we're going to be a fund, whether we're a fintech, whether we're a bank, whether we're insert moniker here. But the short answer is I do call myself the CEO and the co-founder. You know, it's not a general partnership. You know, we make money by the difference between that cost of capital in and the cost of capital out, and we monitor that really closely. You know, we have a lot of lenders behind us who are backing us as well, but we also have shareholders. The other part of our business that we haven't touched on is we have a growth advisory that sits next to our lending product, and it's actually how we do earn a very small percentage of a company, usually 1 to 2%, And for that, you get access to our entire team, plus the 70 shareholders inside Tractor, who are all founders, ex-founders, or family officers. And they're all shareholders in Tractor who know that Tractor's going to be a great company, but also are very happy to help our portfolio founders grow. So, you know, the two things, as I mentioned at the beginning, the problem we were solving was, how do I get capital into a business that's not a VC-backed business? And then, you know, what's the best way to take that business to the next level, which is a combination of the capital and then the actual help and advice. Now, we don't do hands-on keyboards, but the people who are on our share register are extremely impressive people who literally you can book an hour in their calendar, you know, through our internal tools, so you can talk to some amazing founders to help you grow your business.
Now, Matt, there's a couple of, getting on to a little bit of the fun stuff now, there's a couple of people that wear baseball caps in Australia. Mike Cannon-Brookes is one of them, and Matt Allen's another. The image of the baseball cap, the T-shirt, I mean, you wake up every day, it's pretty easy to pick what to wear. Is that the theory?
That's it. I just wear black all the time. I'm in Melbourne, but I have a blue hat. I figure that I don't need too much flair on my clothes. I hopefully make up with a little bit of personality. And the hat, just a blank flex fit. I don't like wearing brands. However, this one is branded. This one has a Tractor logo on the back.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's okay. That's your brand, isn't it? Yeah.
It's my brand and it's subtle. It's on the back. So, you know, I've always just had really crazy hair and you've got crazy hair, but I've just been a little embarrassed by it. So I stick it under a hat.
That's right. And then you've been around the traps in the, you know, quote unquote ecosystem for a long time now, as you mentioned, and you go by Matter and a lot of people get to know you. What's some secrets of where you've, how you've built your network over that period of time?
It was really weird. Like, I just decided one day that I wanted to be an investor. So I took to Twitter, where I've been online there for, I don't know, 15 years now, and followed a few of the people. Nikki from Blackbird was the first one, and just tried to be curious, you know, tried to be supportive and ask questions and curious. So, like, you know, back then Twitter was 140 characters. So, like, how in 140 characters could I, you know, make a statement and ask a question all at once to try and understand a little bit more? And, you know, since then, it's been really interesting. Since then, obviously deployed a fair bit of our own capital. I did work with Blackbird as a scout before they had any presence in Melbourne. Deployed a couple of checks with them. And I think the curiosity is an interesting trait, because you have to be able to check your ego, right? If you have a high ego, you can't be high curious, because you're effectively telling people that you don't know stuff. And my default position is I know very little. You know, I think I'm pretty good at one or two things, but the rest I'm really quite poor at. And I think if you take that as a general starting point and you are genuinely curious with people, then you get a lot of stuff back. In my first, you know, my first angel investing stuff, it was, I didn't have a lot of money, so it wasn't like I was writing big checks to take out people's rounds and they'd have to talk to anyone else. They were tiny little bits of money, but I would try and be helpful. And helpful generally ended up being curious enough to ask questions and then connected enough to try and, you know, see if someone wanted to have a conversation with them. I think the other secret, super secret power that I've had is that I rarely make connections if I don't trust the person or like the person. Like, so, like, for instance, I wouldn't hand investments on to people if I wasn't investing. So a lot of the co-investing that's happened with me is because I've got a check-in and I'm ready to go, rather than I'm like, oh, I wasn't quite sure. So right or wrong, so I'm sure there's lots of founders that think I'm a jerk for not passing this stuff on. But the ones that did generally, you know, then had other people pile in. And I think there's an element of, I think, convictions in short supply in investment land. A lot of people will follow other people in. But if you can be the person that can try and establish a little bit of credibility, a little bit of conviction, and do it with, hopefully, in a curious and helpful way, then, like, that group of skills is, you know, rarely goes astray, I think. You know, it's the kind of thing where you need to be able to have a conversation with founders and other investors. And as you said earlier, there's a little bit of storytelling, but you can't do it too much, because then you're just bullshitting and no one will trust you. So there's a fine line to get, balance all that stuff up to try and, I don't know, help.
Oh, mate, absolutely. It's well summed up. And I suppose further on to that, one final question in regards to how excited you are about the emerging tech and startup scene here in Australia for the next decade or so?
I'm really excited. My kids are 15 and 18. My eldest son is doing a Bachelor of Social and Digital Media, which sounds like the most 2022 course you've ever heard. Interesting enough, you know, he's in year one of that and they're doing things like psychology 101 and how to do a brand strategy and a lot of stuff that, you know, you just kind of osmosis up over time. So there's going to be a bunch of young people coming into our world who know how to do this like natively. You know, where the rest of us, like you and I, sort of were on the internet from the beginning. We can tell people we've been here from the beginning, but the answer soon is going to be, so what? You know, if you're not here right now and you don't understand how the mechanics of things work right now, you're going to be left behind. So, like, I'm super excited. I'm also excited by some of the deep tech stuff, the stuff that that can genuinely make a difference, genuinely, especially some of the stuff that interacts with the real world. You know, we sell capital. It's the most boring product on earth. It's just money. But some people who are building some of the things that bridge into the real world, you know, whether it be quantum computing, whether it be some of the IoT stuff, whether it be, you know, electric vehicles, I think the future is pretty shiny when it comes to the convergence of tech and IRL.
Matt, it's been a pleasure having a chat to you today about Tractor Ventures and your background, and it's always nice to catch up with you in Melbourne recently at the Finneys, and when you're in Brizzy, mate, love to have a coffee as usual. But congratulations on what you've achieved at Tractor, and look forward to catching up.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate your time. Thanks for having me.
For more information on Sub11, jump onto our LinkedIn or email me, chris@sub11.com.au. Thanks for listening.
Listen to the Unfunded podcast, brought to you by the Day One Network and hosted by me, tech writer Joan Westenberg. We're sharing the no-holds-barred, untold stories from entrepreneurs who have decided to build a business on their terms. I'll be interviewing successful founders and operators on the grit and ingenuity it takes to build and scale independent startups without the support of traditional venture capital funding. Subscribe to the Unfunded podcast now, wherever you get your podcasts.